isn't you.
Right.
Gotcha. So what else, what else can you tell us about the community? You know, obviously that you know a whole lot more about this than I do. So I'm just going to kind of let you speak your mind about, you know, what the community is, how it functions, how it works, what you think of it. I'm going to let you go for a little bit. Just go ahead and tell us what's going on with the
Okay,
community.
so yeah, and I think we've said enough of the good things that drew
Yes.
me to it. So now we get into the real nitty-gritty here. I had been in the community for almost a year before they gave me the HOM teaching. Now, the HOM teaching is just incredibly racist, and it comes from Genesis chapter 9, the story of Noah, the flood. And he has three sons. So there's Ham, Shem, and Japheth.
Okay.
That's the Hebrew version of it, I think. In the English Bible, it's like Ham, Shem, and Japheth.
Sure.
So anyway, Noah gets drunk and naked, and Ham laughs at him, wants to show his brothers. Like, look at what he's done, this fool.
Right.
And so when Noah wakes up from his stupor, he curses Ham. And he says, this is in Genesis 9:26. He said, blessed be the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. So Canaan is Ham's son. So the 12 tribes teach that what he's saying there is all of the descendants of Ham are cursed to be the slaves of Shem, all of the descendants of Shem. Now, in Hebrew, from what I understand, there's no differentiation between the word servant and the word slave.
Right.
It means the same thing. You're a slave then if you're a servant. So the 12 tribes teaches that this is God ordaining slavery based on race, because they believe that all of the races have evolved from those three characters in the Bible, from Ham, Shem, and Japheth. So Ham, they believe, is the black race, and Shem, they believe, is the white race, and then Japheth would be the Asians and the Native Americans.
Gotcha.
Because it says that God will enlarge Japheth, and so they take that to mean, that's why it's the most populous race. But that's the only blessing for Japheth, and he's to dwell in the tents of Shem. So it says he's the God of Shem. So basically, what they're saying is, the creator of the entire universe is the God of the white man, and if you're colored, you got to be the slave to the white man. That's your only path to righteousness is to be a slave to the white man.
Gotcha.
And so they teach me this about a year into it, and like I said earlier, my father was black, so they believe that it's based on your father's lineage. So they told me that I'm a Hamite, which is a descendant of Ham. And so then they tell you what your iniquities are based on your race. So it's all just blatant generalization
Sure.
based on, and it's not just based on your race. It's not like these are genetic scientists here telling you what they've deduced from their scientific research. These are people that took a look at your skin color, and they're telling you have this iniquity because of your skin color. And so it's extremely unscientific
Right.
to begin with. Looking back, it makes no sense whatsoever. But yeah, you as a black person are, you have a victim spirit is what they'll tell you. And the funny thing is, when someone tells you have a victim spirit, and they treat you like you're a victim, you're gonna start, feeling that way, and
Right.
you start feeling inferior. And I got the sense going forward from that time. I kind of started, my eyes were open. I started looking around and seeing, the way that children growing up in the community treat people of color. The white children, they grow up and they see Hamites as inferior. And then the black children that grow up in the community, they have this feeling of inferiority, and they act out and stuff. And then the crazy thing is, then when the black children are acting out, and then the other community members are pointing it to it, like, yeah, that's how Hamites are. And it's just like that they created that. You created this thing that you're saying, and then you're going to turn around and say that's how they are. It's horrible. I mean, there's a lot of accusations about child abuse out there that I don't believe, I don't buy into. Accusations from outsiders of the community. But if you want to talk about child abuse, just look at the Hom teaching and talk and look at how they treat the little black children that grow up in the community. That is child abuse.
Gotcha.
All
So
these accusations about, I don't know, I've never seen anybody get hit with a hammer in the community, but they say that, parents are hitting children with hammers. Well, no, that's not taught. They do teach that the children are to be spanked with a thin, flexible rod, which now I don't agree with. I have a 4-year-old son. I don't spank him. I have other means of disciplining him. But nonetheless, I wouldn't say that that's as abusive as people make it out to be. It's a thin rod. It's not a mallet or whatever, but I'm sure there's isolated events. I'm not dismissing that, but they have to be judged individually. I never in my 7.5 years witnessed, the community teaching parents to, beat and bruise their children.
So let me ask you this. During your time with this organization, how many different communities did you live in?
So, about 2 years in, I was sent out to the community in California in Vista, and that is a city community. So I had a lot of adjusting to do. Not only had I lived in the country for a long time, just worked on the farm all the time, but I was also sent out there to go on a waiting period, which is like a courtship. So I had met this young woman. She came through Wablo for like this festival type thing, and I worked up the nerve to ask her father, if I could get to know her. And her father happened to be Mevaser, the tribal leader of the tribe of Yosef, and he was a very intense guy. So already I had a lot of, a lot to worry about moving out to Vista, a lot to be nervous about. But then I'm living in this big mansion with a whole bunch of people, and on top of that, they're keeping the traditions like to a T. A lot of these traditions I had never even heard about, because, like I said earlier, the community of Wablo was very complacent compared to other communities. And so, they were really laid back and they weren't as adamant about keeping these traditions.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because I because you mentioned obviously, this thing is worldwide. You're one person, so you couldn't live in all of them. The ones that
Oh, I
held
see.
the traditions to a T, did it seem like they were quicker to get the switch with kids than the more laid back communities? Do you think it's possible that they were they were supposed to be teaching these disciplines, and you just happened to not live in any of the communities that actually followed that?
I see. Yeah, so it's the same teachings everywhere you go. And I lived in So to answer your question, I lived in four different places. Let's see, it was actually it was two places in Missouri, two places in California, and then Hidden Knight. So actually five different places. But Hidden Knight wasn't like a technical community. It wasn't the same. Anyway, yeah, it's the same teaching everywhere, and they do teach discipline everywhere. Even in Wildbow, they taught to discipline. They always say discipline on the first command, and they do teach that you hit the child with a rod, and
Okay.
to them that means this long, thin, flexible stick. What I was saying earlier about not witnessing the type of abuse that I see them accused of online. I'm talking about like this really brutal stuff that I've heard about online. I didn't include that in my book, and I some people have accused me of dismissing that type of abuse because of what I wrote about it in my book. What I'm dismissing there is accusations from outsiders that weren't part of the community, that didn't witness abuse firsthand themselves. I'm not dismissing the individual claims of people that have experienced the abuse themselves.
Gotcha.
But I'm also saying at the same time, the community didn't teach parents to, beat their children bloody, like with, mallets or all this crazy stuff you hear online. They taught them to spank them, yes, and they got spanked a lot. And there is a lot of pressure on the kids. I'm sure there was a ton of psychological damage. I'm not a psychologist, so I didn't write about that. So I'm not dismissing the abuse. I'm dismissing.
That it was taught, obviously
Yeah.
you're always going to have people that take it too far,
Right.
and I mean, we have child abusers outside of cults too, so it's not like it's a cult phenomenon. What you're saying is that there might have been some people that were abusing their children, but they did that because they were assholes, not because the church taught them to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm with you. I'm with you. I got you. Okay, yeah. So we got into this the child abuse thing. You mentioned that you can't substantiate any of the sex abuse claims, though you did mention that the leader spent a lot of time with this one particular group of girls. You don't know that anything went on, but obviously the rest of us can kind of draw a conclusion there.
Yep.
What about are there any other accusations out there that you want to speak to? Like is there anything else?
Well, I mean, the slave labor, that's obvious. I don't know how that's allowed to persist.
Now, what do you mean when you say slave labor, what do you mean exactly?
It's the, isn't it the 13th Amendment? To the Constitution, there shall be no involuntary servitude within the United States. So that's how the US government defines slave labor, and I'd say a lot of people they feel trapped in the community. They like that you've given up everything you have. And so if And also, you don't know what you're getting into. Even if you've been there a whole year, you don't know what you're getting into. You learn more and more as you go along, and then when your eyes are opened to the reality of just all this hypocrisy and just, I mean, they're flat out wrong about a lot of stuff. When your eyes are open to that, you're left with two choices. Go out into the cruel world and face, your financial ruin, alone or involuntary servitude. And so like you go into these places, the Common Ground Cafe, the Yellow Deli, the bakeries that they own. As an outsider, you go in there and you look around and you have to realize, and I wish people could, be educated about this. You have to realize half the people there don't want to be there for one, and they're not getting paid, and they're working 16-hour days at a minimum, 6 days a week. They get one day to rest. And even then, even on the Sabbath, it's not all that restful. You have to show up to an early morning gathering. It's just slightly later than other days, and it's a really long gathering. It's hard for everybody. I can't imagine what the young children have to go through, but
Right.
it's hard for everybody because everyone is expected to share at every gathering. On the Sabbath morning gatherings, you got to share like double because you're supposed to bring back everything you heard from the week. Each and every member, they're all expected to share. So if you got, imagine you're living in a community of 90 some people and everybody is talking for a really long time.
Let me ask you
It goes
something.
on for hours.
Right.
It's not all that restful, even on the Sabbath.
With the sharing, what is it? And I kind of tried to ask this earlier, maybe I worded it the wrong way or something, but what is it that you're sharing exactly? Is it because and obviously, like I mentioned to you before, I didn't do a whole lot of reading on what this group was because I kind of wanted to experience this with the audience. I didn't want to learn too much about it. So when you're talking about sharing, in my mind, it sounds like confession, but in front of everybody. That's what I picture sharing
No,
as.
yeah, they do that too. That's mostly during Yom Kippur. They keep a lot of the Jewish holidays. No, but the regular gathering sharings, you're basically just regurgitating the teachings, and they even use that term now, about how you're supposed to, you're like sheep, and sheep are ruminant animals. This is another of their many, many metaphors that they use, thousands of metaphors. So you're supposed to regurgitate and chew on what you've heard throughout the week. So you're basically just repeating the teachings that they've given you. And
So now in my mind, this is what I'm seeing. You go to these gatherings twice a day where you repeat the teachings. You have your group teachings that you go to constantly. It sounds like you pretty much just work and then have these teachings beaten into your head over and over and over again, day after day, year upon year. Is
That's
that
accurate, yes.
okay? And I can, it's kind of like, it's sort of like a very long, have you ever seen The Clockwork Orange?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Well, a lot of people will know what I'm talking about. There's this
Okay.
scene where they sit him in the chair and they force him to keep his eyes open and they flash all these images in front of him, and the point is to brainwash him. And you keep seeing these same images over and over and over and over again, and it starts to imprint on his mind. It sounds like the same sort of thing, except over a very long period of time, and it's these teachings over and over and over again. It would make a lot more sense if you'd seen the movie. You might know what I'm talking about. But anyway. So yeah, that I can definitely see how there's some definite, and for the kids especially, for somebody to like yourself, you came into it as a 21-year-old, you were able to experience it, realize, okay, this isn't right, and get out. For the kids that grow up in this that don't know that, I've got to imagine that's got to be extremely terrible for them to go through. And are there I guess. If you know, are there any people that have come out of this group that grew up in it?
Yeah, most of the kids that grow up there end up leaving when they grow up.
Oh, really?
And I know quite a few ex-12 tribes members. A lot of them grew up there.
Okay.
And I will say that it was probably, however hard I thought it was to leave, it was probably 10 times harder at least for the ones that actually had to grow up there. I left my family to join the community. They had to leave their family to leave the community.
Gosh.
And their parents are like begging them as they're leaving, like, don't leave because their parents think they're going to the lake of fire. And I'm sure that the kids that leave, they have that in their heads just constantly, like, I am going to the lake of fire because I'm leaving. Because you have that drilled into you just all the time. It's in almost all the teachings. You can't leave. You will go to the lake of fire if you leave. For eternity, you'll be tormented for eternity if you leave.
Right, yeah. And Delusion Dispeller in the chat says, I have spoken to a woman on the phone who is part of 12 tribes. She said the children are malnourished, very drained, and disassociated mentally in order to survive the beatings and strict life. Does that sound like your experience? Did you see sort of the same thing?
Yeah, it's interesting she mentions malnourishment, and I'm glad she did. Yeah, Yonake was intense about people not overeating and calling people fat. He would call people out in the middle of the gathering and call them fat in front of everybody. And the first time I lived with him was in Hiddenite. So when I say during the gathering, Hiddenite, just a little background here, they bought the property in like 2007, I think, and they had a ton of conferences there that were all the leaders from all over the world. They would fly them in. So we're talking from like Australia, Europe, Canada, South America. They fly in the leaders, and they have different conferences for different topics. And so there was this woman there for one of the conferences, because a lot of the conferences had to do with, like, I don't know, bookkeeping, cooking. They had, like I said, different topics. And they pick like the person in charge of each of those things within their communities would come out to Hiddenite, and they'd have these conferences. So it'd be in front of like 100 or so people. And so there was this woman that was a little bit, on the heavy side. I wouldn't say she was fat though. She was just, healthy looking.
Sure.
And he just, called her by name. Everyone's quiet, standing in this big circle, 100 people or more, and he pointed to her, called her name, and said, "You are fat. You are fat, and you eat too much, and you need to stop it. You're in
Wow.
sin." Yeah, she was so like calling out her sin in front of everybody, and like I don't even know that's sin. And like I said, she's probably just healthy, but the result of this type of thinking is that yeah, a lot of the women especially were anorexic in the community. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that the children were, somewhat malnourished. They were definitely worked a lot. They worked in all of the different communities, industries. When I worked on the farm in California, the Morning Star Ranch in Valley Center, California, I always had children alongside of me, and I was both a training teacher and a farmer at the same time. They call it training. It's the homeschool. They homeschool all the children. They call it child training. So a teacher is called a training teacher. Anyway,
Sure.
so yeah, I always had children with me and they always had a job. But I'm sure it's hard for them, They wake up early like everyone else, they go to bed late like everyone else, and they work alongside of everyone.
Wow. Yeah, that's not good for child development. They say that kids need a lot of playtime to imagine and play games, and that sort of play is very important for development into adult life. So if all they're doing is working, I mean, I think it's good for kids to get some work in,
Right.
but you don't, obviously there's an extreme there. Okay, so yeah, we've anything else, in terms of the bad stuff that you can think of?
Well, we touched on the fear just a little bit. There's actually more to it.
Okay.
There was this guy that left the community when I was living in California, and he had left with a young woman that she partly grew up in the community along with him, He partly grew up in the community too. They had both left at one point and then came back. So anyway, he was single at this time, and he was freshly, newly baptized. His name was Ryan. We had renamed him Tamim, and he was working late at night in the Vista Deli, and here his friend from long ago is visiting, and they end up leaving together late at night, and they got into a car accident, and both of them died.
Oh, wow.
And so what we were told by the leaders was that she had fallen asleep at the wheel, crossed the median, and hit head on into a semi truck. And their judgment of the situation was that if you leave the place of our father's protection, there is no guarantee that you'll be protected. So they say that, basically God struck them dead.
Right.
And so, like, there's this, they instill this fear into you, and it's just deep and it's constant. Every chance they get, they'll say, like, that's God, that's why you never leave. And they'll just drill this into you.
Okay. Nico brings up a good point. He says, "Whoa, renamed? That was kind of glossed over." And you had talked you mentioned this earlier, and I didn't pick up on it, or I just didn't think to ask you about it. So when you join this community, you're given a new name, right?
Yep. Yeah, you are. It's always a Hebrew name.
Okay.
And like it's usually your shepherd or whoever's closest to you that names you. So like in my case it was Ben Shimon that named me. My new name was Lev Rock, which means tender heart. So yeah, you're given a name based on who they think you are. And throughout your experience there, you're told who you are.
Okay.
And they even have a saying. They say, we know more about you than you know about yourself. And so that's part of it. Naming you is just part of that, telling you who you are.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So yeah. And when it comes to, I understand that they try and put a fear into people to keep them from wanting to leave. Is there any active move to prevent people from leaving? Like, obviously, they create a situation where wanting to leave is going to be very hard for anybody, but do they actually stop people from leaving?
Yeah, so this is all psychological, of course.
Right.
They don't have guns, they don't engage in violence, as far as I know. But they, from the get-go, like it's all about prevention, like preventing you from leaving. So they will watch out very carefully. They're extremely sensitive about any differing opinion. So if you have a difference in opinion, if you say anything that contradicts what they say, you get a warning for first. So if you still and you're like, no, I'm telling you this is how it is. Like say I disagreed with the Ham teaching or something, and I'm like, no, that's wrong. Well, you get a warning, and if you still say no, that's wrong. Then you're cut off. And this is like a tactic where you're ostracized. You're looked at as different, like a leper. You're outside the camp. So you don't wear your diadem to the gathering. And right away, people are like, oh, did you forget your diadem? And they're looking at you like they're concerned. And when you say no, like I didn't forget it. And they're like, oh, like okay, he's cut off. And then everyone's looking at you, and you don't lift your hands at the gathering if you're cut off, and you don't step forward when everyone steps forward in the circle to pray and to lift their hands. and everyone's looking at you. People, you feel all these eyes on you all the time, and then they pray for you. They say, like, pray that he would, come to the light, like, that you would, restore him and give him understanding and all this stuff. And so there's all this social pressure
Sure.
placed on you. And then if you're still just like, no, I mean, this is wrong, I'm gonna leave, then they just surround you. And it's just like every member, one after another, boom, 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 like, no, don't do this, and they try to warn you, you're gonna go to the lake of fire and just all this stuff.
Okay.
And like, I'm really concerned for your soul. Don't do this.
Okay. Would there ever be a situation where they would punish an adult member with violence in any way, like a switch or beating or anything like that?
No, not that I've witnessed.
Not that you witnessed.
No.
Okay. And so with this social ostracization, obviously that can be very powerful. But if you're still, after this group comes in one after another, trying to tell you, don't do this, don't do this, I imagine what, then you just pack your stuff up and leave?
Yeah, and you have to understand, like, a lot of these people are people that you've grown to love and respect, and a lot of them very sincerely believe in the movement. So it is, yeah, it's very difficult to just, turn your back on them, and they all need you because you have a function. And
Right.
so, like, the community functions around your function. Every member has to kind of fit together to make it work. So, they're like, what are we gonna do without you? And it's just a lot of a big, heavy guilt trip. But yeah, they'll buy you a bus ticket if you got nowhere to go and you're really wanting to leave. They won't give you anything else.
Okay.
So, like, my wife and I, we left with, just clothes, no money. We got a bus ticket to Northern Michigan, and that was it.
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna get into to you leaving and why you left and stuff in just a second. But before that, the little bit of research that I did do, what this sounds like to me, and please tell me your thoughts on this. What this sounds like to me as an outside observer, is we have a situation where it's a lot like the Branch Davidians before David Koresh showed up. And so you've got a group that is very susceptible and they're following the teachings and everything else. All you need is one very charismatic guy to come in and kind of, and so with David Koresh, anybody who's familiar with that, he disagreed with some of the teachings of the Branch Davidians, and he and his group broke away from the Branch Davidians, and then Waco happened. So it was all very quick. And that's why he gets confused with the Branch Davidians, because it all happened so fast, that everybody just assumed they were still part of the same group. But he was actually a different sect of that group. So do you see that as well? Because that's what it looks like to me. Like, if the guy who ran your community, for
Yeah,
instance,
Yonake.
yeah.
Yeah, if Yonake dies, all hell is going to break loose within the community, and it's going to be just this power grab. I've heard speculation from former members that maybe Hayamek is going to try to take over, and the men who are apostles are going to resent that. If when I was there was just this basic understanding that actually Mevaser, he's this charismatic leader from Yosef. Like, he was kind of like Yonek's favorite, even though Hakam was Yonek's right-hand man for a long time. Mevaser kind of became his favorite, so there's this basic understanding that probably Mevaser is going to take over. But I don't know, I think there's going to probably be a power struggle. I don't know how they're going to handle it because all the members are just so used to just listening to Yonek's teachings and doing whatever Yonek says. So
Right.
And now you've got all these people, all these potentials, like
Right.
a lot of people that could potentially take over. I don't know, it could create quite the situation. And also not only that, but I've experienced myself where someone new will come along, and they'll just, join the community and start telling people what to do, and all of a sudden they're a leader. There is this guy in California that I wrote about in my book. His name was Nathan, and he came in and he became like the a crew head there at the Morning Star Ranch, like freshly baptized, just because he's really good at telling people what to do. He was this big, strong white guy. I think his race had a lot to do with it too.
Of course.
And it was, I wasn't really jealous. I had been there for like 4 years, and I thought it's odd that he's just telling me what to do. But it wasn't so much the jealousy. It honestly wasn't. A lot of it was just because he didn't really know the teachings. Like, how can we let this guy just tell us what to do? He doesn't actually know.
Right.
He hasn't, they call it the anointing. Like, the teachings are like the anointing.
Gotcha.
Like he hasn't received the anointing as much as someone that's been there for like 30 years or something,
Sure. So
So
you
it was a scary thought, like someone could just come in and take over.
Well, that's what happened with the Branch Davidians. So the guy that started it died, and his son was supposed to take over, but David Koresh was also very popular in the community. So after the son took over, it only took a couple years before David Koresh had more followers than the son had, who was supposed to be the prophet. And that's how they ended up splitting. And then, of course, you got Waco. So that's what I see as an outsider,
Right.
that right now everything's stable because the guy's still there. When he passes, though, you're going to get different sects breaking off. Some of them might go along with the way things are now, where it's more benign. I mean, yeah, there's some fucked up things going on there. I'm not saying that there isn't, but things could be a lot worse than what they are too.
Right.
So you're probably going to get some that follow the teachings, and then you're going to get one or two that break away from that, and I think that's where we're going to wind up with some fucked up things happening in the future. What do you
Yeah, and
think?
it'll be soon too. I mean,
Yeah.
Yonick's in his 70s.
Okay.
So yeah, it'll happen soon.
Okay. All right. Well, before we move into, why you left and how that happened and what all that, is there anything else that we should know about this group that hasn't come up
Well,
already?
I got into the hierarchy a little bit of like the single people not being as respected as the married people. That's also another power play that they use because the married couples actually decide who gets to get married and to who you marry. So like they put people together.
Oh, okay.
And so like you want to win favor with them.
I see. I see.
And
So.
also it's based on race. So they try not to, put a black person with a white person.
I
And
see.
for me, I was mixed race. And some people, like the leaders, like Hayek and Saraf Gamaliel, specifically those two, told me, hey, you can marry anyone. But I'm not sure that everyone felt that way. I think a lot of people felt like I can't marry anybody because I'm mixed race.
I see.
So. I went a long time. Like, I mean, my whole time there, I was single, actually. But, I felt like, will I ever get married?
I see.
And so it's this, I don't know, it's a pretty heavy thing, to sign over your life like that. And marriage is just such it's something that so many people really desire.
Right.
you know, to find this meaningful relationship, and they have that power over you. They get to decide if you get that or not.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
So,
So, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
no, that's okay. I was gonna let you finish. You had mentioned that, and maybe I misheard you or misunderstood. You said that you met your wife there and you guys slept together. Is that right?
Yes, and I don't think we were gonna be hooked up. I don't think they were gonna put us together. You know, she's like another one of those healthy weight types. And you know, I had suppressed a lot of my desires while I was there, but I kind of came to the realization that I'm more attracted to thicker women.
Sure.
But I didn't have a lot of time to think about that, you know, like
Right.
I wasn't supposed to think about that.
Sure.
So like you masturbate, it's supposed to be a mechanical release is what they call it. So you're not supposed to think about sex while you're masturbating.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's
That's
weird.
very weird.
So, you know, I was attracted to her. You know, she's a thicker woman, but I don't think they would have put us together because they would have considered her to be fat, and also because I'm mixed race and she's white. And they certainly, you know, I don't think they would have put me with a white woman, to be honest. Like, if you're mixed race, maybe they'll put you with a Japheth or Hamite, but not a Shemite, because the Shemites are like, you know, the glorious supreme race.
Okay. So do you is it wanting to be with your wife? Is that part of the reason you decided to leave?
It was a factor for sure, but I think the main factor was just completely losing belief. And I'm an honest person. I didn't try to pretend.
Okay.
As soon as I realized that I didn't believe anymore, I was cut off.
So how, and I'm very curious how you came to be, I'm assuming you're an atheist,
Yes, I am.
how you came to be an atheist while you're in the middle of this very religious organization. Like, how did that happen?
Well, I read the Bible a lot, every day, and I think the very first question that entered my mind was regarding Moses. I just started wondering, like, why? You know, it's a little odd. There's a story about Moses where he's on the mountain by himself, and he's kind of pleading with God. God is like, I'm gonna kill all these people. And Moses is like, no, please spare them. You know, you said you would make them into a mighty nation. And so then God's like, okay, I won't kill them. And so Moses comes down the mountain and he's like, God was gonna kill you all, but I told him not to. So you're welcome. You know, like I don't know, I just kind of started wondering, like, wait, there was no one there with him. And if you're gonna like if you're gonna make yourself the leader of a bunch of people, you know, like that would be a good way to go about it, especially a bunch of superstitious people, to just tell them that God told you that, you know, he's gonna kill everybody, but that you pleaded with God and so you saved their lives.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I just started questioning things like that. Like, how do I know that that's true? And then the whole thing about the lake of fire. Like, if you're gonna come up with a religion and you want to get people to follow you, what greater incentive than the threat of the lake of fire for anybody who doesn't believe what you're saying? Or the reward of eternal life? Like, can you think of any greater incentive than eternity? Like, I don't know. I just started being really skeptical about all of that. Like, maybe they did make this up. And then I started thinking, who did write the Bible? Like, who put the Bible together? And I realized it was in the hands of the Catholics for a very long time. And they were the ones that determined even which books got put into the Bible. But the 12 tribes teaches you that nobody had the Holy Spirit after the second century until Yonake. They teach you that Christianity, including Catholicism, that they're completely fallen away and evil.
Oh, really?
That once they stopped living communally, like in the book of Acts, that they lost the Holy Spirit. And so, if they didn't have the Holy Spirit, how is it that they have the authority to determine which books go into the Bible, which books don't?
Right.
You know, like, and then the translators of the Bible and all the different manipulations and all that. I
Sure.
don't know. I just started thinking this is unreal. And knowing that they didn't have written language, you know, in the time that Moses was supposed to live, the Hebrew people were illiterate. And that was written, the story of Moses was written like 800 years after Moses was supposed to have lived.
Right.
So, and they do teach you a lot of religious history. They teach you a lot of biblical stuff. And so they basically gave me a lot of fuel for this fire of skepticism
I
by
see.
teaching me these things.
Okay. So what happened? You realize that you don't believe in God anymore. And you realize that they're probably never going to let you be with a woman you want to be with, and that also wants to be with you.
Yeah, and
So
they lied to me a whole bunch, like,
yeah.
and that was really the final straw. There was this time I was living in the community in Warsaw, and Yonake had a whole lot of teachings about this particular woman that was dying of cancer, and they decided to treat her. She had this big open wound in
Oof.
her chest, and they put black cohosh on her, like, you know, rubbed it into her chest, and you know, miraculously, the flesh started growing back, and so Yonake's giving these vivid teachings all the time. Just there's all these teachings that come out about this, how it's prophetic that, you know, she was wounded and now she's being healed. There's this new life, this pink flesh that's growing back, and that is significant. That symbolizes the community itself. And so her getting better is the community getting better. Like we were once, you know, starting to fall away. We were in sin and now God is healing us. Well, she died. And
That's right.
I found out that she died because one of the young men that was there in the community she was at, you know, he was helping his mother, they say Ima in the community, but he was helping his mother take care of this woman, and he came back to the community in Warsaw, and he told me, you know, she's dead, and people were praying about her in the gathering, like praying for her to get better, and this young man told the leaders in that community, like, did you know Rakefet died? And I was right there with, you know, them when he told the leaders this. I said, yeah, we know, but we just don't know what this means, you know, how this pertains to the teaching. We just don't know how to tell the community. And so I was one of the few people that knew that she was dead in that community in Warsaw. There was like three of us that knew she was dead. And we had to go to the gathering every day, morning and evening, and just watch these women lift their hands and like pray for their sister who had died, like hoping that she would get better because they think she's still alive,
That's
you know.
yeah,
And
it's
they see her as their sister, you know. They
yeah.
love this woman and they're just hoping every day that she's going to get better, but we knew that she was already dead. And I just thought this is so messed up. Like,
Yeah,
I
that's
can't
true.
say anything. If I say something, they're just gonna say, you're out of here, and I got nowhere to go. What am I gonna do? You
Right.
know? But I wanted to scream, like, this is so messed up. You can't just hide this from these people. This is so wrong. And all just to preserve their dead religion. Yonake said, if she dies, we die. Well, she did die. So admit it, But they wouldn't want to admit that the community's dead. They're a dead religion.
Yeah, that's terrible,
So,
man. That's
it
terrible.
made me angry. Like,
Yeah.
no, I don't believe, I'm not, like, I'm fed up with these lies. And that was, the other lies were more personal. Like, they told me I was going to go on a waiting period with a certain young woman. They said, in the fall you'll get to go on a waiting period with her. Well, spring came around. This was summer when they told me this, and like they separated me from her, and like a year later I'm like, so do I get to go on a waiting period with her? No. They're like, we'll talk about it in our next meeting. And then next meeting comes around, did you talk about it? No, we had more important stuff to talk about.
Wow.
So it's like, a lot of the other lies were just personal. They weren't as messed up, but it's still like it
Yeah.
hurt. Like, why are you lying to me?
Right. Yeah, that sucks, man. So what did you have to go through this these stages where you were first shunned and then you were did you go through all that or did you have to did they just kick you right out? What happened?
No, I was cut off for a very long time. Like, usually people either leave or get rebaptized. They call it being washed. But no, I was cut off for months, and I don't know, I'm just not the kind of person that I'm gonna pretend like everything's fine. And so I didn't want to just, get washed, as they say, if I wasn't feeling it. And so I felt like I just had to be honest about it. Like, no, I'm sorry, I'm not feeling it, but I still worked hard. I still lived according to the traditions and did what I had to do, but I just wasn't connected from it was like from August until November of 2012. So
Oh,
my sister got married in August. It all started, I first got cut off when I actually got sent to my sister's wedding. She wasn't in the community. She was outside the community, and they thought, hey, maybe this is a good opportunity. They sent me with another family from the community, and so like they thought, yeah, maybe it's a good opportunity for evangelism too,
man.
and go hand out our papers and talk to people about the community. And it's all the way up in northern Michigan. We got no communities in Michigan. Well, now they do, but at the time they didn't. So yeah, they thought it was a good opportunity, but then what ended up happening is I get back in contact with she's my half sister, by the way. I get back in contact with her father. We have different dads,
Sure.
and he was always, nice to me. Every time I'd see him, I didn't grow up with him or anything, but he was always a really nice, happy guy. But I saw him, and he had cancer, and he had this whole shaved head and wasn't quite as happy anymore, but he still like really loved me, and it's like this, still a deep connection. And he said, if you ever need a place to stay, you come here, you can call me. And so I think that was the beginning of it. It's just I considered it, and he had this big property. It's a beautiful place.
Right.
And I started dreaming about, like, taking care of the place. He can't take care of it anymore. Maybe I can grow a big farm there, like big garden, and have animals and all that. So
Yeah.
it became this fantasy, like, yeah, that'd be the good life.
Okay, so you were shunned for a while, for a few
Yeah.
months.
About 4 months, yeah.
And then what? You had to sit there and surrounded by all these people at the gathering and hear them shout at you, say no.
Yeah, and also I had to go through Yom Kippur. Like I said, it's like at the time when they all confess their iniquities publicly. And I just witnessed a lot of people that normally didn't give a shit. And then they just like break down and cry because that's what you're supposed to do. And I just felt like, yeah, that's a lot of hypocrisy, and you're judging me for being cut off.
Yeah, okay. And then I'm assuming, you go through that process, and then what they bought you and your wife a bus ticket, you guys left together.
Yeah. So, and like we weren't supposed to talk as single people, and so we had very little interaction before leaving together. But, we were both kind of struggling at the same time. We both wanted to leave. And so that's when I went up to her, and I was like, trying to look on the bright side, and I was kind of trying to rationalize wanting to stay, because there was part of me that
Sure.
was afraid to leave.
Sure.
And so I was like, hey, at least it's better than a Turkish prison.
Right.
And so like that's where the title of my book comes from.
Right.
And so and I told her, I said, I mean, if you really want to leave, don't go alone. Don't just like go hitchhiking. You could come with me. I got this, my stepdad's place, and he'll take us in.
Cool. And so you guys, let's go through that last day, the day you leave.
That was a surprise to us, actually. We didn't plan that.
Okay, what happened?
So there was this guy who had been in the community before, and he left for a long time, came back, and he has like a big, Christian background. And so he's like really kind of got this whole me and Jesus got a good thing going vibe. And so he's like, he wants to take me under his wing. So I do some plumbing jobs with him. He was a really good plumber. That's what he did, outside of the community. So he was teaching me about plumbing, and then he's like talking to me about, I'm working on my humility, and I'm trying to make myself humble. And I said, well, that's a really proud thing to do. And he got really offended at me for saying that. So then he's so then he has this vendetta against me. And I don't know if I told him. I guess I told him about this note that Molly, who's now my wife, had given me. She gave me this note that said, yeah, I've been thinking about it. I do want to leave with you. I told him about that, and I think like part of it has to do with like him being upset with me for calling him proud when he's working on his own
Humility, that's
humility.
pretty funny.
But so he goes straight to the leaders, tells them what's going on between me and Molly. And so right after the gathering that night, they have this meeting with us, and they kick us out right then and there. So it's like 10 o'clock at night. Buy a bus ticket and drive us to all the way up to Des Moines, Iowa. So it's like this 5-hour drive.
Oof.
David drives us there, the same David
Same
that
guy.
picked me up. Yeah, and then we're on the bus together for 24 hours or so, just getting to know each other.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
What was it like trying to readjust to life outside of the community?
It was hard. I thought that it was going to be a hell of a lot easier than living in the community. It is now, for sure. But at first, I thought, oh, great. Like, all of our hard work is over. Like, because we were used to working 16-hour days or more, 6 days a week. But we get to this farm, and it's like November in northern Michigan is nothing to mess around with. Like, from November until April is winter in northern Michigan. And so, we were splitting wood every day. We were expected to do a lot. And Molly has psoriasis. I have sickle cell anemia. And Apparently, like the psoriasis really hurt when she would go out in the cold.
Sure.
So she was having a hard time, and her and Dan were having, arguments and stuff, and he was grumpy. He was dying of cancer. I mean,
Right.
that's nothing to mess around with.
Sure.
And so it just turned into this situation where nobody was happy. And he expected us to go get a job, and we were out here in this farm that's like, 4 miles from town either direction. We didn't have a vehicle. We had to walk to try to go to, job interviews and fill out applications. And these towns up here, they're seasonal. They're based on the tourism industry, so a lot of people hire in the summertime. It was just, it was really hard to find jobs in November. I
Right.
didn't find a job until April. So yeah, it was a hard transition, and it was hard psychologically as well. My wife is still, emotionally affected by her experience there, and she was only there for a year. I was there for, almost 8 years. But for me, it's like, well, I know they lied. Like, I know that what they're saying isn't true. So there's nothing in me left that thinks that any of it could be true. So like, that's where I'm at with it. But I can understand how people would still have a lot of emotional attachment.
Sure. So, and actually, I did want to ask you about that. So the whole idea was that the world was going to come to end at the end of 2012, December
Well,
21st,
no,
right?
I'm sorry. I need to clarify that. That was something my dad had told me before I
Oh,
joined.
okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So
Yeah.
they didn't believe
Sorry
that.
about that.
No,
Yeah,
that's
no, my
okay.
dad was wrong.
Okay.
The community could still be right.
What do they
I don't
believe?
think so, though.
What do they believe? What do they think it's going to happen?
They believe that the race, they call it the race, that the race is going to start in like 2020, and the world's going to end like 50 years later.
The race.
They call it the race. It's based on, what is it? Deuteronomy 25, Leviticus 25. I don't know. It's like, you keep the Sabbath years, not to be confused with Sabbath days. It's like every seventh year the land is to rest. So you keep the Sabbath year for seven Sabbath years. So it's 49 years. And then on the 50th year is the year of Jubilee. And so they think that's the year that Yahshua is going to return.
Gotcha.
So the race is when they like things get really intense for them, and they have to be self-sufficient. So you were asking a lot of questions about self-sufficiency earlier, like do they provide food for the cafes, for instance? Well, they're going to have to do that to fulfill their own prophecy. They're going to have fruit trees in every community that's part of this prophecy. They're going to have, their farms are going to have to be tip-top shape. And so they actually, in preparation for the race, they sent out a man. His name is Yathade from the community in Germany, and he's this expert farmer. And I actually got to train under him for a couple years, both in California and Missouri. And so they sent him out to teaching the farmers like how to be self-sufficient, how to grow a lot of food organically, and so they're preparing for what they call the race.
Gotcha.
And part of it is there's a lot of pressure on them to not only grow their own food, but send out what they call walkers, which is people in pairs of two that go out to preach the gospel of the community. And they hand out free papers, and they meet people, and they bring them back in. So they're going to have to send out walkers full time during the race. There's a lot of pressure that they've put on themselves with all these teachings about the race. So then, towards the end of the race, they have to be prepared to flee to the wilderness. This is part of their prophecy, too. They get this from the book of Revelation. The woman that flees to the wilderness to avoid the beast, they say that's them. The community is the woman, and she gives birth to a male child. Well, they believe that male child is also the 144,000 that's described in the book of Revelation.
Sure.
And so The 144,000 is supposed to be two from every community. And it's gonna be 12,000 from each tribe. So there's got to be what, 6,000 communities in each tribe.
A lot, yeah.
And they, you know, they are any they're nowhere near that. And they have to be there in the next like 40 some years.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of work to do. So, Jessica H, we're gonna as we're wrapping things up here, we're gonna start taking some questions from the audience. And Jessica H wants to know, were you relieved when you left? Was there like what she says, was he relieved? But I'm kind of adding to that. Was there like this sense of thank God I'm out of there, or were you still nervous? Like, maybe I didn't make the right decision. What, how are you feeling about that on that last day
Well,
after you left?
the only anxiety I had was, you know, now I've got this other person to take care of and myself. So,
Right.
yeah, my only anxiety in leaving was just financially. Like, I got to be the man, I got to be the provider. Got to get a job. We got to get our own place. But other than that, yeah, I was relieved. And like you said earlier, you know, you didn't want to have someone tell you what to do. I came to that conclusion too. A lot of times what they told me was just flat out wrong. So, you know, if I was right, why shouldn't I? And they had this expression, this is really messed up. You're gonna appreciate this. It's better to be wrong together than right alone.
Yeah, that's the antithesis of who I am.
Right.
That's funny.
And so that was relieving to me to be able to be right alone, to
Right.
be able to be my own man.
Right. Yeah, that's very anti-individual, isn't it? Very
Yes.
community-centered, that saying. Nico asks, what is his opinions on the Amish? Very similar lifestyle, but it seems a more healthy community.
And in Missouri there's plenty of Amish, and I got to meet one of them. Well, I met a lot of them, but I got to know one of them personally pretty well. Marion was his name, and there was this community. We used to go to the Bolivar Farmers Market, and I wish I could remember the name of this town outside of Humansville, Missouri. But there's this big Amish community there, and we'd stop by Marion's place on the way to the farmers market, and his neighbor would be at the farmers market with us. And so me and this guy Johanan Patman, who I read about in my book too, we had a good relationship. We'd go to the farmers markets together a lot. We'd stop and talk to Marion, and we'd trade with him. We'd barter. The Amish like to barter a lot, so we'd bring like I don't know. We would trade seeds and stuff like that, and produce. We had a lot of fruit in the summertime, so we trade fruit for seeds to plant our winter crops. So yeah, it was cool. We just you know, sit and talk and shoot breeze together and talk about farming and whatnot. So we had a lot of similarities. We had a lot in common. And it was just this like friendly relationship. It was one of the highlights of being there, was you know, hanging out with the Amish.
Right.
And I know this young man Yatsa, who left the community too, who also did a lot of work with the Amish. Yatsa built a sawmill at the farm in Wablo, and he learned a lot from the Amish that operated a sawmill nearby. So yeah, it was nice. So there was a lot of interaction when there was a community in Wablo, Missouri, between the 12 tribes and the Amish.
Okay. Because you seem more familiar with it than I do, are you aware of the Amish having the same sort of abuses in their community as you experienced? If you don't
No,
know, that's okay.
yeah, I'm actually not aware of their teachings either, but I'm sure there's you know, like there's going to be isolated events of abuse everywhere.
Right.
I'm not sure if they actually teach to, you know, abuse your children.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm sure they have the same spare the rod, spoil the child teaching. We get into a whole long discussion about what it is and what is not child abuse, but we don't have to go there now. Not seeing any other questions. Do you have anything else you want to add? I'm not seeing anything else from the audience just yet.
Okay,
It's
no,
that's about
that's
it.
fine. I mean, it was nice.
Yeah.
It was relieving being able to finally provide for my family. And when after my son was born, I worked two jobs, and then my wife got a job, and I went back to college. And so now I'm an administrative assistant. So, things are good now. I have, like I said before, I have sickle cell anemia, so I needed to get away from that physical labor. So now I have a desk job and I get paid decently. And, so now it is, to answer that question, it is very relieving to have left, now. I can say that.
And you sound like a really smart guy, so I'm sure you're going to do well in life. You just got this very interesting experience that you went through for about 7 years, and you're just going to drive on from here. So yeah, man, this was awesome. I'm really glad that we did this. Your story is a very fascinating one. Jessica H. Has already purchased your book and has already started reading it, and she tells me it's
Thank you.
awesome. So, anybody else out there, the link is in the description. Go check out his book, Better Than a Turkish Prison. Definitely pick that up. Yeah, man, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with this. Was did you have anything
Nice,
else you
great.
wanna
Thank you.
anyone anything else you wanna bring up before we end things?
I think we about covered it. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more in my book because I was able to
Sure.
just sit down for months and
All
just
right.
take the time to really write down what I was thinking. But yeah, you're a great interviewer. I will say that. Very gracious.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I appreciate your invite too.
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna be trying to do a lot more of these. This is the stuff that I want to do. I really enjoy talking to people that have been through crazy shit. Whatever that crazy stuff might be, whether it's
Right.
aliens or cults or whatever, I want to talk about it. So,
Yeah, interesting stuff.
I appreciate you coming on. Thank you very, very much. And you can go ahead and sign out, and I'll say goodbye to everybody.
All right,
All right.
appreciate it.
Yeah, man, thank you very much again. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye. All right. So I forgot to mention this before, but the picture you kept seeing pop up is him. So when you're watching through the slideshow there, and you see the guy pop up with the glasses, that's him. So this was a lot of fun. Muse Silo, thank you very much for this. This was awesome. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed. He's a very well-spoken guy, obviously very intelligent. I'm probably going to pick his book up and check it out because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff in there that we didn't get to. So, thank you everybody for coming out. There were quite a few of you that rolled through here. Delusion, you had a lot of interesting things to say. I appreciate the stuff that you were throwing out there. Thank you very much for that. Jessica H., wonderful as always. Mew Silo, thank you for setting this up. You are the man or the woman. I'm not sure yet because your name is ambiguous, but thank you. Nico, Sunless. It's late. I'm not remembering people. I'm kind of scrolling through the chat to see if hopefully I didn't miss anybody. Delaney K, I know Delaney K, you were out there somewhere, ma'am. Thank you very much for being here. I know Papa Smurf stopped by. He's been missing for a while, so it was nice to see Papa Smurf out there. Thank you, sir. Brad, thank you for coming out, Brad. Brad is the original subscriber, by the way. I don't know if how many people are aware of that, but he is the first. He's still coming out. I appreciate that. Gary, always wonderful, Gary. Thank you very much. Alexandra, thank all of you. If I forgot you or I missed you in the chat, I apologize. It's been almost 3 hours, and I'm tired, and I want some water. Thank you, everybody. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful night. Don't forget to like the video, share it with your friends, subscribe to the channel, Follow me on Twitter at American Gadfly 2. And of course, Death from Above. I didn't forget you. Death from Above. Thank you for stopping by. join the Discord. We have a lot of interesting conversations there. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful night. Thank you very much. Peace.